Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter, and joining us today is a special guest. It's Nigam Arora. He is the publisher of the famous and top-performing Arora Report and four investment newsletters, and his website is theaurorareport.com. That's A-R-O-R-A, report.com. Nigam, welcome.
Thank you, Jack, for having me.
So, you know, let's start off with you've had some, you know, very successful calls in the marijuana stocks, and now you've come out with a report saying you expect some of the Canadian marijuana stocks to drop as much as 90%. Is that right?
That is correct.
So that's going to be a little bit of a teaser for the audience listening or reading. Before we get into the details of that, why don't you tell us about your investment philosophy, which you know you call the ZYX change method, which you developed, and how it applies to your current call on the marijuana stocks.
Sure, Jack. So, Jack, it's fairly straightforward. When I look at Wall Street, or let's talk about the stock market or any market, well, there are two aspects. One is, you know, stocks rise over a period of time, and their institutional investors will buy and hold, and they're trying to get, you know, their 7% or 10% return every day, every year. So that's great. But then there are people who want to do better than that, and then there's a battle. You know, you got people on the buy side, you got people on the sell side, everybody's competing. And Jack, it's not a secret from you that some of the best and the brightest are there, you know, with all their computers and all their quants and programs and high frequency traders, there are all kinds of people who are trying to get an edge. So when I look at that and I say, hey, if I use just a simple traditional fundamental analysis, or if we use a simple traditional technical analysis, anybody who's worth anything already knows that. So what edge do I get with that? Well, at best, I may beat the market by a few points. That's the best I'm going to do. So how do I get an edge? I look for what's changing. And the concept is, If you can figure out the change before everybody else or before most people, you got an edge. Now, change, when I talk about it, you know, it depends on the time frame. You know, you can look at a change in years, decades, hours, days, minutes. Yeah, you know, you can look at whatever time frame you want. So change is not independent of the time frame. Let's take, you talk about marijuana, right? So let's talk about it.
Right.
Very long term, 5 years, 10 years from now. You know, we are projecting that the worldwide marijuana market is going to be over $200 billion. Right now, what's being sold from legal sources is not even $1 billion. You know, if you saw the earnings of some of these companies, the big ones with multi-billion dollar valuations, you know, like Tilray sold $9 million worth of marijuana in a quarter, which is nothing, right? So in terms of the marijuana sales, or marijuana-related product sales, there's a huge opportunity when we talk about 5 to 10 years. And that is what brought us from the long side, meaning we were buying these stocks at some one point, and then we sold out right at the top, then we bought again, and then we sold out right at the top, and now we're holding a small position only on one marijuana stock right now, and we're holding a short position in another one, and then we're holding some position in some stocks that are somewhat obscure, and I won't state those here today, because I don't want to run them up or do something like that. So let's talk about the change. So the change was, you know, when we look at very long term, we say marijuana market is going to be great. But when we look at the valuation of these stocks and technically how they run up, and we look at the sentiment and money flows, and we say, hey, a change is going to happen. You know, we gave a sell signal right at the very recent top of the marijuana stock. How did we do that? Well, we were looking at money flows, basically. How much money is flowing into it? And the sentiment. And both were extremely positive. And it's, again, an age-old thing. When the sentiment becomes extremely positive, money flows become extremely positive, that is often a sell signal. And the reason behind that is, when the sentiment is extremely positive and money flows are extremely positive, guess what? Anybody and everybody and their cousin who wants to buy it have now bought it. There's nobody left to buy it, at least in the short term.
Now, how do you track sentiment and money flow?
Well, the money flows we track algorithmically. We have a lot of proprietary work done over the last, you know, several decades. Sentiment is, again, algorithmically, but the sentiment, you know, we pay a lot of attention. You know, I get over 1,000 emails a day sometimes. So that's a very good source for what people are saying. We'll look at the social media, primarily Twitter, and see what people are saying. And then we look at the options, because options, as you know, have implied volatility built in and the premiums built in. So if option premiums are going way high, we know sentiment is going positive, especially if the volatility isn't there, you know. So we look at those things and kind of combine all them and, you know, make a soup out of it. We have proprietary indicators. So that's how we do it. So getting back to marijuana stocks. So long term, very long term, we're very bullish. Very short term, we gave a sell signal and we saved ourselves a lot of money there. And now somewhere we're going to step in again. So that's the game we're playing.
Now, in terms of the ZYX change method, is that primarily what it is? It's the sentiment, the money flow that you track, and how else do you track where we are in the change cycle?
Sure. So we are looking at 6 different screens, and sentiment and money flows are part of the different screens that we have. So the screen, basically we start out with money flows. That's our starting screen, because I'm not going to claim to know everything about everything. I don't, right? There's just no way to do it, right? You know, I mean, I can hire all the programmers and all the analysts involved. We're still not going to know everything. But when we look at the money flows and we dissect them in a lot of different ways, algorithmically, that tells us the collective wisdom of what other people are doing and what are they thinking. So that's a shortcut to kind of narrow down our list. So that's how we start. And then we got all 6 screens. They're all on my website. And then, you know, it's kind of a pyramid. We kind of build it. And, you know, most things don't pass, but the things that pass, that's where we have signals either to buy or sell or short sell or, you know, whatever it may be.
And you follow, I mean, so your philosophy is kind of a mix of fundamentals and technicals as well then, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're looking at fundamentals, we're looking at technicals, we're doing a lot of quantitative analysis, we're looking at everything in the context of macro, play style mixed up in all those 6 screens. So, you know, we talked about those 6 screens, but then we have another model, which we call the ZYX Global Allocation Model, which is mostly macro kind of thing. And we kind of combine these two. And so we put everything in the soup. You know, our philosophy is, you know, the objective is not to be a good fundamental analyst or to be a good technical analyst or be a good quant. None of those are the objectives. The objective is to make money.
That's a good objective.
Yeah. So we are very happy to combine, test anything that makes money.
So let's get into what we began with, which is you're calling for the Canadian marijuana stocks to drop as much as 90%. Why is that? And when is this going to happen?
Well, Canada is a problem, right? A big problem. And that is Canada doesn't have enough people. So, you know, I wrote an article on that. And, you know, if you search Nigam Arora Canadian marijuana drop 90% in Google, you'll reach that. Either on my blog or on MarketWatch. And so that's where I have all the numbers. But the basics are fairly straightforward. We have our analysis on where is the Canadian marijuana market today, the market size. And even though marijuana has been legalized, a lot of it is still black market. And then we say, okay, now that's legal, the market is going to grow because it's going to be easier for people to buy. And then we say, okay, that's going to be the total size of the market. And then we question, is the black market going to go away? Well, eventually, again, talking about change, time frame. Will the black market diminish a lot in 5 years, 10 years? Probably. You know, for example, you know, I mean, cigarettes are still sold in a black market, but, you know, not that much. Whiskey is still sold in a black market, but not that much. Most people are dealing with it legally. But if you go back, the days of prohibition, and when prohibition was removed, did the black market in liquor evaporate the next day? No. It carried on for a long time and slowly diminished. So one of the mistakes a lot of analysts make is they think, oh man, the black market is going to disappear. It's not. Those people are the dealers, they have the infrastructure, they got a customer, they're not going to pay taxes, what they're going to sell is going to be cheaper, they're not going to go away right away, it's going to go away over a period of time. So when we look at that, so what the market size is, with the growth being legal, take out what we still think is going to be the black market, at least in the short term, and then we look at the profit margins. So one of the differences that I think we're kind of in a minority opinion, the analysis out there is marijuana prices are going to go up. We say, well, in the very short term, yes, because there are a lot of shortages. But give it a 6 months, a year, prices are going to start dropping. Because if you look at all the infrastructure that's being built, all of that is going to come online. And all the snafus and the distribution are going to be taken care of. So prices are going to start dropping. So then you start looking at if prices are going to start dropping, then what are vendors going to do? Well, if you look at Canada, there are very strict regulations in terms of how you sell it. You know, there's a limited distribution network. There are very limitations on packaging. For example, you can use only one solid color. You can have only three promotional items. And so on and so on. So the avenues to increase sales beyond a certain point aren't there, the traditional avenues. So we think the profit margins are going to drop. And then we say, okay, so here are the legal sales, here are the profit margins are going to eventually settle. And then we say, what PE we do it? And I advocated 15. Now, some may say it's a growth industry, so we should give it 30 or 40. Well, some companies will get 30 or 40. But if you talk about all the companies collectively, are they going to get 30 or 40? No. Just not going to happen. Because for a lot of companies, in the end, marijuana is going to be a commodity. You know, it's not going to be any different than, you know, wheat or corn or,
sure,
you know, soybeans or something like that. So then we come up with, so what will be the valuation of all the companies only for the Canadian market, okay? And then we look at what's their valuation today, and result is a 90% drop. Now, I do want to say that a lot of Canadian markets are getting head, Canadian companies are getting head start. They're justifiably focused on international markets. So this 90% drop is based solely on Canadian market. Okay? Now, the companies that are able to expand successfully in international markets are going to have an edge because international markets are big. But every Canadian company is not going to succeed internationally. In international markets, you know, it's, you know, right now presumption is, well, we're going to grow all this marijuana in Canada, right? And how do we grow marijuana in Canada? It gets cold, so we grow in these buildings. Well, what do you think of a place like Northern California? It just grows in sunshine. It's cheap. What do you think of places like India and Australia? It just grows in sunshine and it's cheap. You don't have to build anything. So international markets are not going to be that easy. So anyways, that's kind of a thumbnail of the thesis.
And I think now one part of the article that you discuss is that the market cap of the Canadian marijuana companies is, I think, what is it, about 100 and something billion right now?
Yeah, it's about $50 billion.
Well, now it's dropped.
Yeah. Before they started falling for the top 10. Now okay. It's probably down to like 40 or 35. But if you combine all of them, that's about $120 billion.
So it's about,
that's, let's a big say, market cap.
Yeah, and but the actual market, so I mean, the thesis, your thesis is that, you know, their market value is 120 billion plus, whereas the actual, you know, the core Canadian market is what is the legalized market. Let's emphasize, is going to be a maximum of how much, you said, a couple of billion.
Well, we said about $5 billion, maybe $6-7 billion. You know, it's just not going to be more than that.
So yeah, I guess the PE will have to, or the implied valuation has to obviously come down.
Absolutely. And remember, you know, so not only the market is the first step, but the second step is what are the profit margins, right? So most of the analysis is out there. They're assuming pretty high profit margins. And we're saying, no, you know, maybe they're for 1, 2, 3, 4 quarters, but after that, they're going to start dropping.
Do you expect essentially most of the companies in this space are going to have commodity type of margins at some point?
I wouldn't say most, but yeah, lots of them. You know, I can differentiate, you know, because I don't want to say most. You know, are we talking about number of companies? Yes. In terms of total sales, I don't know, because let's look at it, you know. Let's look at the soda, right? So most people drink either a Pepsi product or a Coke product, and if you go beyond that, you're drinking a Dr. Pepper product. Beyond that, I mean, there's not a lot of soda sold, right?
I guess we're getting into, you know, if these companies will be able to actually develop brands which have margins. Is that the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. Some will succeed and some will not. The companies that bring brand, you know, ultimately, you know, what happens in every market is ultimately we're talking about years down the road, there will be dominant companies and they will build brands and they'll kill everybody else's brand. But there will be some artisan brands, small ones, that'll be good too. But people in the middle market, they're going to get killed.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you mentioned you have a long and a short in this space. Which stocks do you like right now in the marijuana space?
Well, Canopy Growth is our long, and we have taken profits on most of our position, you know, near the highs. But now we are with a small position left, and as it dips more, we're going to add to it. On the short side, we still have a short on Tilray.
So you're long Canopy Growth and short Tilray.
Correct.
What is your objective on Canopy Growth? Where do you see that stock going and when?
Well, we think it's going to go to $70 or $80 range. assuming they're able to execute everything, maybe in 18 months to 2 years. So that's what we think, but we wouldn't be surprised if it drops even more first.
So you expect canopy growth to get back to 70 or 80, but not really exceed that high? Is that?
No. So again, the time frame. So when we look at $70 to $80, we're looking at basically, next 18 months, 2 years, somewhere in there. So that's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Eventually, we think, assuming this whole thing, cannabis thing keeps on working, eventually we think Constellation Brand is going to end up buying Canopy at some point. So we don't think Canopy is going to end up going to $400 or $500 a share, because somewhere we think Constellation is going to step up and they're going to say, this thing is working. This thing is going to go to $400 or $500. We're not going to want to pay $400 or $500. Stock is at $70. Let's pay $100 and buy it out. So we think that's going to develop some point. We don't know how long that's going to take.
So that's kind of like you see that as being the upside, $100 buyout.
Yeah, 100, 120, somewhere in there, we think Constellation Brands is going to step up. Now, that is assuming that Canopy reaches $100 or $120 based on real fundamentals, not just based on sentiment and money flows. If it reaches there on sentiment and money flows, then Constellation Brands is not going to have any reason to step it out, because they're now, that's just temporary. It's going to fall again.
And what about Tilray?
Well, Tilray, we're short from the, as high as $265. Actually, I'm looking at my machine, $105 right now. We think stock falls back to, it's very volatile stocks, so it's hard to say, but anywhere from $35 to $65, somewhere along the way. And that's when we'll cover it. That's our objective.
Okay. So but long term you're bullish on the sector or going out 5, 10 years. It's kind of where we were with with the dot-com stocks. I mean, in a way, we had there was a big
Yeah.
picture, but the valuations were high.
Right. But you see, the right time to buy dot-com stocks were either you started buying them in 94, 95, and the time to sell them was in 2000, early 2000, 1999. The time to buy them again was late 2000, 2001, and then about 2008, 2009. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's, this thing's going cycle, so it's important. And if you pick the cycle right, and if you're patient, right? One other thing I try to preach to investors, I know preach is a strong word, but still, it's really preaching, that if you want to be successful, you got to be patient. We sell investment newsletters, right? A lot of times people come in and say, oh, well, I subscribed, so because you guys are good at marijuana, and I want to, take half of my money and buy marijuana stocks today. And we say, you can't do that. Well, you can, but if you do, they'll be foolish because you'll lose your money. You got to pick your points, And people don't always understand those, and the professionals do. I don't know your audience, but professionals do. But mom and pop don't. And the way I try to explain it to them, I used to try to explain it to them, and people didn't understand. Then I came up with a very simple illustration, and now people get it. And what I tell people, and actually that is in our Getting a Running Start guide. So let's say you love Starbucks coffee, and you have an urge to get a Starbucks coffee cup, right? You want to drink some coffee. Assuming Starbucks near you is open, you pick and choose when you want to go there. You go there, and you tell the barista there, "I want my coffee this way," and you describe. A few minutes later, you get it. Okay. So a lot of our endeavors lie for that way. You know, we decide what we want to do. There's some regimen, and that's what people do, right? For example, if somebody works in a regular job, you expect you to be at work, let's say, 8 o'clock, and that's what you do 5 days a week. But the markets aren't like that. You know, markets do not have any rules. Like, you can buy today when you want to, or the regimen that, you can buy only on Mondays. There's nothing like that. So markets, you have to just wait and wait. Jack, are you a hunter?
No.
Okay. I'll give you
Oh, but
a
you're going
hunting
to use the
analogy.
analogy of waiting for sitting in a tree and waiting for the
Yeah.
deer. You could be waiting
Right.
a
You
whole
can't go to
weekend.
the tree and say, at 9 a.m. I'm going to start shooting, right? You
Right.
can't do that.
I've
But
had
that's an analogy.
conversation. Yeah, I've had conversations with guys who they went out on a weekend and they were in a tree for a couple of days, cold, nothing happened.
You go. There you go.
So,
So in
yeah.
the market, sometimes you have to wait for months, sometimes you have to wait for years, for longer term opportunities, but there are always shorter term opportunities. We are finding shorter term opportunities every day.
So
For the
let's,
long term opportunity, you got to wait.
Nigam, let's talk about some of the, what other markets do you cover and some names that you like?
Sure. So, Jack, we cover 23 different countries. Main focus is the United States. So what do we like? Well, we talked about marijuana canopy growth right now. I won't go into some small names, but in other big names, we still like something like Citibank. The stock hasn't done well. But we think, when we look at the book value of the stock, where it's trading at, we still think over a period of time, interest rates are going to go higher. Regulations have come down. We think over next, it's a long time, but 3 to 5 years, the stock can double. So that will be an example. We like Facebook. The stock has come down a lot. And there's a lot of controversy about privacy issues and so on. So it can come down a little bit. But when we look at, it's not expensive stock, and we look at Instagram and WhatsApp, Instagram, people in the United States use it like worldwide, so they understand that if you go to Instagram, there are not many ads. So it's a long runway to monetize it. WhatsApp is not popular around here, but if you go to Asia, that's the mainstay of people. It's hugely popular. And that hasn't been monetized. So there are a lot of avenues for them to monetize those assets. So a long period of time, I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook's stock doubles and triples from here.
So what, so you see a lot of runway in these in what in WhatsApp
Absolutely.
and yeah I, they really haven't done anything
Instagram, absolutely.
with WhatsApp. I mean that's a tremendous tremendous
Oh,
service.
yeah. Yeah, it's
Everybody
so funny.
everybody I know in Europe uses it.
Exactly. Once you step out of the United States, Europe, some people use it, but if you step out in Asia, it's almost universal.
Yeah, and I haven't seen any. Let me see. I haven't actually taken a WhatsApp call in a while, but I don't notice any. There's no ads. Nothing right now. Nothing gonna.
No, there's nothing. There's no monetization, or very little, depending. So there's a long runway, and these guys will figure it out, and they'll do it slowly. Ultimately, everything is going to have ads, like Facebook does or Google does.
What about I think in earlier we talked about your kind of your focus on the gold miners.
Yeah.
What are you doing in that sector? What do you like there?
So right now we have, you may laugh at this, and it's probably not of much help to a lot of people. Remember when gold was $1,900?
Yes.
Okay. So we started really pounding the chest when gold was in $600 before that. I'd say, hey, back up the truck. $1,904, the very top day, we said, sell half of your gold and put a stop on the rest half, or the remaining half at 1757. That stop hit, so we got our quarterly gold, our long positions, and we had a lot of gold stocks too, out of those. And then I think a day or two later, we said, you know, back up the truck from the short side, right? Short side is you're betting on it going down. And so we still have short positions on gold from 1757. Now, we have taken profits on most of those, but we still have a small position. We still have some small positions on some of the gold and silver stocks from very, very high values. And we've taken profits like 90% of those, but we still have some small positions left. In the meanwhile, parallel with that, we've seen periodically short-term trades. So those are long-term. Remember, talk about gold stocks, gold, you know. So right now, long-term, very long-term, we're bullish. We think in 3 to 5 years, gold is going to be higher.
What's your uh, what's your
Short-term,
what's your long-term target in gold? Let's say, 3 to 5 years.
oh, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing gold at like back to 2000 or even 3000. I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. So very long term, we're going to be bullish. Somewhere here, we're going to be saying again, back of the truck, buy gold, but not yet, not there yet. And so what we do in the meanwhile, we do a lot of short term trades in gold and gold stocks.
What percentage of your newsletter service is full? I mean, like, what's in terms of short term trading, how many short term trades do you give out, I don't know, on a monthly basis, let's say?
So one other thing, you know, again, we've done a lot of things that are not traditional in the business. You know, in the newsletters is very typical. You know, people advertise, gee, we're going to give you, and they compete. We're going to give you so many trades, and, you know, more the better, and so on and so on. And we say, well, that's all meaningless. There's only one objective, and that is definitely not number of trades. It's how much money we make. That's the only thing, right? So we cannot predict the markets. So it all depends on market conditions. So we've had months when we may have done two or three short-term trades, and then we've had months where we may have done 30 or 40 short-term trades.
Wow.
So it depends on. So remember my example of the Starbucks. You know, markets are not like any other endeavor. We can decide that, gee, we want to go to Starbucks and get a coffee right now. You know, you got to wait for the right setups, and you know, you got to let things happen. So, if market gives a lot of short-term trades, we take them. If market doesn't give them, we don't take them. We, you know, we feel no compulsion that we have to trade.
Exactly. Nigam, tell us, about, your background and how you got started, in the investment advisory business.
Well, accidentally. So my background is I'm an engineer and a nuclear physicist. I have founded two of the fastest growing Inc. 500 companies. Of course, I sold them a long time ago. I've been involved in kind of a, you know, venture capital type business, funded a lot of companies, about 50 or so along the way. So I was very successful from an early age. I was trying to invest money in the stock market. I remember very first time I had a broker at Merrill Lynch who said I should buy RC Cola, and so did I because I didn't know any better.
Right.
So, but along the way, you know, I was always curious about the markets, and first I thought, That one goes a long history, but it was all fundamental, and I learned about it. And then in 1987 crash, I lost millions of dollars. I thought, well, this doesn't work. Then started learning about technical analysis and realized, wow, you know, some of it works, it's helpful, but a lot of it is just after-the-fact voodoo, you know, and so on. And then being an engineer and so on, you know, I said, hey, let's apply some genetic algorithms. Let's apply some neural nets and so on. And at one time, I even set up a company to develop a lot of methods with the intention of selling them. And ultimately, I sold that company. But nothing really worked well. You know, it kind of worked, but not really well, right? And so I kind of had pretty much given up on all this. But then along the way, I wrote a book on change management. And one day I was sitting in a plane, and next to me was sitting a guy. He looks at me and says, are you Nigel Marora? I say, yeah. And he said, oh, we use your book every day. And that book was really meant for senior managers, like C-suite people. And, you know, I thought he was probably a C-suite guy or one of the big companies. So I said, what do you do? He said, well, I'm a manager at a hedge fund. I said, wow. I mean, I could not even comprehend why a hedge fund guy would be using my book. And he said, well, you know, you said all these things, and that stuck in, you know, that stuck to us, that if we could start looking at change and kind of adding that to our methodology, we could do better. And, you know, light bulb came on in my head. And after that, I started experimenting, some start thinking of change and model, started developing models and algorithms and testing them, and I was very surprised that this stuff really works. So that's when I started getting out of my other endeavors and slowly ended up full-time concentrating on the financial side.
So it was all...
So it was kind of an accident.
So was
if I had never met the guy in a plane, I would have never done this.
So this was a result of the book is Theory ZYX of Successful
right.
Change Management.
Successful Change Management.
I'm looking. It's up on Amazon. Very expensive book.
Correct.
It's 5 used copies, $100.
And you can buy a new one for $59.95.
One collectible at $115.91. It might be signed.
I don't know why. Maybe Jack, you can explain this to me. I've never understood when people can buy that for $59.95 new one. Why would they buy used ones for $151? Now, they may have my signatures on them because I, you know, signed a lot of books along the way for a lot of people. So sometimes that's why they have higher value, but I've never understood why they're sold for higher value.
Yeah, there's an arbitrage opportunity somewhere here. Nigam, let's talk about your newsletters and how people, you know, can maybe give an overview of the service and how people can sign up, check it out, and subscribe.
Sure. So, Jack, we publish 4 newsletters. One is called ZYX by Change Alert, which primarily focuses on individual stocks. And you get a long-term portfolio, model portfolio, and then you also get a lot of short-term trades. And then you get a lot of other information on gold and marijuana and macro and all kind of things you get. Then we have, and it is if you want to be fairly active, if you want to do short-term trades, but we also have a lot of subscribers, you know, who focus only on our long-term model portfolio, don't care about the short-term trades. And then we have subscribers who say, I'm not into long-term. All I want is all these short-term trades. And then we have subscribers who say, I don't care about any of the stocks. I just like your ratings on gold and like your ratings on oil. And so on. And we have a lot of Wall Street types who subscribe because we do a morning capsule every morning. They just like that. And they say, the reason we subscribe is because you're always spot on what we really need to know today. And we can read it in 5 minutes as opposed to digging around and trying to figure it out. So that's how we UX by Kindle. Then we have a ZYX Global Multi-Asset Allocation Alert. That is medium to long term. We get two portfolios. We call them low risk and lower risk. Try to take less risk than the market. That is exclusively ETFs. But those ETFs are not just US, but all over the world, not just stocks, but all kind of asset classes, ranging from currencies to commodities. And, you know, we may have regular ETFs or we may have inverse ETFs and so on. That is for those people who love ETFs, who don't have a lot of time. You still get the morning capsule every morning, but, you know, we're not trading in and out day in, day out. You know, some months we have zero trade and so on. But it's a longer term, medium term.
So this newsletter
then
is...
Then we have...
So this is focused...
ZYX Global Multi-Asset Allocation Alert.
Okay. Now the letter is focused exclusively on ETFs, and this is basically your long-term kind of macro
right.
trades. Okay.
Right. Right. Medium term to long term.
Okay.
You know, all those time frames, but not short term.
Got it.
And then we have a ZYX Emerging Markets Alert, which is focused on 15 emerging markets, you know, India and China and Brazil and Mexico. And the reason being that 83% of the population of the world lives in these emerging markets. That's where the growth is. But they're very volatile. So very long term, that's a place to be. In the short term, you know, you can lose your shirt.
Yeah.
So that's very focused on that. And then we have something that a lot of people love and a lot of people hate. And that is a short selling service. Called ZYX Short Sell Alert, where we're short selling. And of course, you know, depending on your audience, short selling is only if you're sophisticated. I wouldn't want everybody to do it. There's more risk there. So those are our four alerts. Our most popular is what we call the Corporate Bundle 1. And the Corporate Bundle 1 is where you can get all four alerts for the price of two. It's very popular. We call it 1. That's what individuals subscribe, but institutions and organizations, you know, they subscribe for multiple people. So that's how it works.
Okay. So people that are interested, they can go to theaurorareport.com to sign up. That's A-R-O-R-A, report.com.
Right.
And Nigam, before I let you go, let me ask you, what's your outlook on the U.S. stocks right now?
Well, we have been very, very constructive for a long time. Right now, we are still constructive. We think seasonally positive period is ahead of us. But we also have somewhat defensive posture. You know, we're holding little more than normal cash. Actually, we actually more than that. We're holding some hedges. And interestingly, you know, we're holding those, we bought those hedges before this present market drop. And when market drops, those hedges become profitable. So we've been taking profit on those hedges here. And if market keeps on falling, we'll keep on taking more profit. So we're constructive. But we're concerned about next year. So because when we look at a macro picture, we're seeing two things. We're seeing leading economic indicators slowing in China. We're seeing them slowing in Europe. We're seeing them slowing in India. We're not seeing them slow in the United States. Right? Says they're going full guns, but we're seeing them slow in other parts of the world. The second thing is, you know, as I analyze, you know, in the middle of the earnings season, is that earnings are coming out good. But when we look at the growth, the projections for next year, the momentum is slowing. So that's that. And then the next thing is U.S. recession. You know, recessions are notoriously hard to call. Nobody can really call them. You know, we usually find out after the fact. You know, when people used to ask me about 2018, what is the probability of a recession? I would say near zero. What's the probability of a recession for 2019? I would say 25%, maybe 30%. And recession is when markets get hit hard, typically 6, 9 months before that. So unless the economic indicators change or earning growth picks up, we will progressively go into more defensive mode. One more thing, Jack, I want to share with you, which may be important
Sure.
depending on, who your audience is. So about one third plus of our subscribers are professionals. They're the hedge fund guys, they're the financial advisors, they're the brokers, and the rest of them are individuals. So that's kind of the break we have here.
So that's the subscriber mix.
Right.
Okay.
About one third to 40% are the professionals,
Okay.
which is somewhat unusual for newsletters.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Well, Nigam, thank you for joining us, and let's follow up in the months ahead.
Sounds good, Jack. Take care. Great interview. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.